Hey friend, welcome to Rise and Shine with Emily C. I'm your host. This podcast is all about rising from the ashes of your past trauma so that you can step into motherhood with a fierceness and confidence you didn't know was possible and become a generational game changer. I'm so excited that you've decided to include me on your journey. Together, we're going to rise and shine. Let's go. I am so excited to be here with you today. Today, we are going to dive into the topic of overeating and overdrinking being the same thing. Today, I am so excited to have Caroline Holkey joining me, and she has an interesting story. So she's always had a pretty good life on paper. Happily married with two kids, a leadership position in corporate marketing, and plenty of good friends. But she wasn't quite happy. And this led her down a path of self-discovery. She started examining her relationship with alcohol. And once she figured that out, then she started to look at her corporate career. She is now a drink less coach and helps women get rid of the shitty parts of drinking and create a life that they love. Her work centers on the concept that we are taught what to think and, if we are lucky, how to think with regards to other people's work. But we were never taught that we can apply critical thinking skills toward our own thinking. This is so true. So true. We grow up believing that our thoughts are true. This is great if we have helpful thoughts, but many times they are not. Caroline has a skill for helping her clients tease out what thoughts are driving any habit that is not helping them. She works with them privately to develop a plan on how to unbelieve these thoughts and create a life they wouldn't dream of numbing out. Welcome, Caroline. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. It's nice to be here today.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
So what was the tipping point for you when you started really questioning the belief system that was driving the habit of drinking?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, you know, I grew up in a household where my parents drank. They had a lot of great friends. They partied a ton. They were real young and all that stuff. And it's not like there was anything traumatic about it. It was just, that's what I learned. Like, this is what adults do. They drink. And I drank. And that was just kind of part of who I was and all that stuff. And I think that at one point, I realized that, you know, I noticed that a girlfriend was still on her first glass of wine and everybody else was on their, I don't know what number it was, but you know, we were way far ahead of it. And just the act of me noticing that, I noticed that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I was like, I wonder why I'm keyed into that. Why am I tuned into that? And so that just started my questioning. Like, okay, first of all, it's interesting that I noticed that. Mm-hmm. There are a thousand other different things that I could have noticed, but I picked up on that. So what does that mean about my own drinking? Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I started going down that kind of rabbit hole, it was, I just realized that for myself, that I was a little groggy in the morning. I would make bad food choices because I was feeling a little groggy. I was, you know, like there were extra calories. There was waking up in the middle of the night. There was like all these kind of more subtle things that isn't something that makes a real dramatic story. But when I think about the additive behaviors, or, you know, the full impact of what that was making on my life, I kind of felt like I was driving with the emergency brake on. Mm-hmm. Like everything was working. Everything was okay. But I didn't feel like I was at my full potential. So I started, you know, questioning. I read a couple books. I listened to some podcasts and I found a coach, and her message was stop over drinking. And I was like, ding, ding, ding. That's it. I don't want to quit drinking. I just want to stop over drinking. Mm-hmm. And so I started working with her, and you mentioned the idea that stop over drinking and stop overeating are very much the same. Let me note that I do not work with alcoholics. I work with people that are more in like a gray area drinker, like mm-hmm. I was. And the reason that I think that this work is so important is that our society has told us that you're either a normal drinker or you need to go to AA or rehab. Mm-hmm. But there's a big space between there. There's a huge continuum. And so I think it's really important for people to understand that there are resources for you. If you fall into this space, it's not a binary either. Yes or no. There's kind of like a middle ground where you get to decide. You can learn how to control your drinking. And those are the people that I work with. So I think that that's important to distinguish, because my brother was in AA. I get it. That totally works for a lot of people. And that's exactly what a lot of people need. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to caveat that, because, you know, that kind of overdrinking is not the same as overeating.
No.
So, yeah. So I work with those that are like still, you know, having a good life. But I think that description of like, of driving with the emergency brake on is probably a good one. Or you can go out and do the test online. You know, I did the Am I an Alcoholic test online, and it said that I wasn't, which actually confused me even more, because I was like, okay, so technically I don't have a problem. That means I don't know, have anywhere to go, mm-hmm. but I know that I do have I've got a problem with what this is doing for me. So yeah. Then what do I do? So
it's sort of the societal norm that unless you've reached the point of catastrophe, you don't have a problem. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's the belief floating around that I don't need help until, or I don't need to improve until the bottom falls out of my life, mm-hmm. and catastrophe strikes and it's just chaos.
Right. Because there's such a stigma attached to it. Mm-hmm. So if I were to say to you, like, say you bite your fingernails. Okay. That's a habit too. Mm-hmm. Like, if somebody has some solution to help you stop biting your fingernails, it's not a big deal. Like, there's no shame associated with it. Mm-hmm. Like, you just go do the thing and you figure it out. But with drinking, there's such a stigma associated with it. And that's why I think so many people suffer in silence. Like, mm-hmm. I know that I'm not going to go sit in a church basement for sure, because that's not where I belong. Because they'd probably say that I'm not in the right place too. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what to do here. Mm-hmm. So those are the people that I work with.
Yeah. So, the driving force between any habit, be it drinking or retail therapy or emotional eating. All of these habits are coping mechanisms. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. If you look at what's going on, it's avoidance of negative behaviors. Mm-hmm. Negative emotions, because we are not taught how to manage negative emotions. We're very actively taught to avoid them. Mm-hmm. Like, we're told things like, don't cry, man up, make the peace, right? We get this messaging really early. Think about it. You can drink, you had a bad day, have a drink. Oh, I'm sorry, honey, here, have a cupcake. Like, you can go buy XYZ. You've got retail therapy. You can scroll, you can Netflix until who knows how long, until Netflix says, are you still awake? Are you sure? So our society actively provides us with all this material that we can avoid our feelings. And so we internalize that, like, oh, I guess there's a problem with my negative emotions. And I just want to offer that the fastest way through is just to become familiar with our emotions, really accept them for what they are, they're just trying to tell us something. Sometimes it's completely off base and that's fine. Sometimes it's something that we need to key into. Mm-hmm. Like, I think of, you know, our emotions, our bodies were designed to feel emotions.
Mm-hmm. Our emotions serve a purpose.
We've lived through 100% of them. Mm-hmm. Like, our body knows how to process them. We resist them. Mm-hmm. And that makes them, it makes our brain think that they're a lot worse than they are. Mm-hmm. And we create all these negative behaviors in order to avoid them. So I'm a root cause kind of a coach. I would rather, like, if a wound, like, rather than putting a store brand Band-Aid on a wound, let's go ahead and, like, take care of it. Let's do the stitches. Let's like handle it at that level. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't cause problems later. So that's how overeating and overdrinking are connected. A lot of times we'll find that it's the same behavior. Like, I'm stressed out, I'm going to go ahead and have a drink. I'm stressed out, I'm going to have a cupcake.
Yeah. And so to take this even deeper, your experience is created by your thoughts, and your thoughts are created by your beliefs. So what you believe about yourself is creating your thoughts, and 95% of your thoughts, friends, you're not aware of. They are subconscious.
Yeah, definitely.
They are things that were said to you over and over and over again in childhood, through those developmental years of your life. And those thoughts, when they're on repeat, will create your habits and your life experience. So if you want to dig down and really change the behaviors that you're doing, be it drinking a little more than you should, managing your money poorly, overeating from time to time when you're stressed out or you're experiencing some negative emotion, then you really need to peel back the layers of the onion and figure out, like Caroline said, the root cause. Because that root cause is, whether or not you're aware of it or not, is coming out in many facets of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I will say that it's very difficult to see our own beliefs because we think that they're true. We think it's just an observation. Like, I'm a procrastinator, or I just don't let things go. Like, I'm telling you the truth, right? But that's just a belief. That is just something that you've thought over and over and over again about yourself. And the more you think that, then more, the more reinforced that becomes in your own, in your own life.
Evidence shows and up.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, yeah, our thoughts create our feelings, which determine our actions, which determine our results. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, 1,000%. And so when we have a belief, like we can get frustrated because we keep doing the same things over and over again, even though we say that we don't want to. Well, it's because it's rooted in that belief. Like, I am a procrastinator, therefore, or, you know, and we make up these excuses of, I need the deadline. Like, I will do it. It's going to be great at the deadline. And okay, fine. It turns out that way. Well, the truth of the matter is you don't even know, because you only do it at the deadline. You may have fantastic work if you do it the week before, but you've never done that because you've got this belief that you're a procrastinator.
Yeah.
And they're so sneaky, because the things that feel like it's just an observation are the ones that are really, really hard to see for yourself.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of times, you know, you can ask your partner, you can ask, you know, a colleague, somebody like that, they see it so clearly. And it's just like with working with a coach is not in your head. So a coach doesn't believe your stories.
They can call you out on your shit.
Definitely.
So we've talked about the societal tendency to numb ourselves out, how our society gives us all of these different ways to numb ourselves out and not feel the feelings. So what would you say? What piece of advice would you give someone who is listening today to, and they are searching for a way to numb themselves, to stop numbing themselves out and start to feel the feelings, but that shift can be scary.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it'd be fantastic if I could give you a pill, if I could give you a flip of a switch. You know, I like to start with, you know, with baby steps. Let's just say it that way. The first thing that happens when people come to me is they're super frustrated because they keep doing this. The story that they're saying is that I can't figure this out. And so as soon as you have that mentality of, I can't figure it out, you don't figure it out.
Yep.
Like, your brain wants to prove that true. And so we need to open the door a little bit. Like, let's let a little light in. Like, I'm figuring this out. I am, you know, learning how to do this. I am whatever it is. Like, let's just like loosen the grip a little bit. That's one thing. I think that it is the most powerful work that I have seen is noticing how our thoughts are creating our reality. So again, just like that example, I can't figure this out. So you don't figure it out. Like, there's a lot of procrastination in there. There's a lot of doing more of the thing, over drinking, over eating, whatever it is, because, you know, why bother? I'm never going to be able to do this. I'm going to beat myself up about it. I'm going to do all these things, but you don't end up doing it. So that is one thing. Just notice how your thoughts are creating your reality. Then there are a number of things that can happen. One is if you don't do the thing, if you don't overdrink that night, you say no to that second glass or third glass or whatever it is, or don't drink at all that night. Let me tell you, that is a gold mine waiting for you. Like, have your recorder in hand, have your phone in hand so you can record yourself, because all the negotiating thoughts are going to come up then. It's the, I'll start tomorrow. It's not that big of a deal anyway. I might as well finish off the bottle and put it in the recycling bin, whatever. I mean, whatever it is, it's going to be different for everybody. But it is a gold mine when you do that in the moment, because that's going to kind of like your primitive brain is going to send up these signals of, these are all the reasons this is a terrible idea that you're not drinking right now, or you're not eating, or you're not whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's a great opportunity to capture that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just be increasing your ability to be self-aware and sharpening or strengthening that muscle. Because if you've spent most of your life, maybe all of your life, not being self-aware and numbing yourself out, that muscle is not strong. It's just like when you start to go to the gym. If you haven't stepped foot in a gym for a couple of years, you're not going to start like lifting 50 pound weights. You're going to start with the 5 pound weights, or maybe the soup cans. Like,
yeah,
you have to take the baby steps and go incrementally until you build up the muscle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's well said. And I think also, you know, just engaging in a mindset of curiosity, of compassion, you know, anything that kind of opens you up to explore. Because look, the reality is this work is never done. Mm-mm. I mean, it's an ongoing thing. So when you're excited about, you know, I would wake up and think, oh, I'm kind of interested to learn what I'm going to learn about myself today. Mm-hmm. Like, that fuels much more success, I have found, than, oh God, another day, you know, like that whole dread of, I don't want to do this. This is going to be awful. I don't know what's ahead of me. I'm kind of scared of that, because I, even though I'm not liking the results I have today, it's familiar.
I know what I'm getting.
I know what I'm getting. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to go over here, but I'm kind of scared because, again, this is familiar. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot to be said for what our biology basically is doing. It's trying to keep us safe and in the cave, and, you know, we don't know what's going to happen over there. Mm-hmm. So that identity shift is that's no joke. That's real.
It is real. Mm-hmm. It's rewarding. Don't misread what we're saying, but it's a jump.
Yeah. And I would say that, like, I mean, when you keep doing the same things over and over again, you're going to keep getting the same results. Mm-hmm. So there is a reason why you have decided to go down this path of inquiry, like whether that be to stop over drinking, stop overeating, learn how to jump out of planes. I don't know, whatever it is, like whatever your goal is, it always does require thinking differently. It requires different action. It requires, you know, stepping out of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And it's completely amazing. And the fact that it's a little bit scary means that you're going to get something different. Mm-hmm. Just like with your example earlier about going to the gym, like you feel the lactic acid building up in your muscles and you don't really see the muscles for a while. Can probably be longer than you want it to be, but those are all signals that things are changing, and that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what you want.
So why should someone... why should a listener, if they're listening to what we're saying and their curiosity is piqued, why should they work with a coach rather than go it alone? Because a lot of people will say, oh, I can do that. That's no big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say that you totally can. Mm-hmm. You're going to know best how you study, how you learn. So there is no reason why you couldn't figure it out on your own, but you'll know. And, you know, as long as you're honest with yourself, like, I know that I can sit down and I can learn calculus today or whatever in the next month, I could do it fine. Now, for me personally, I'm going to need a tutor. Like, I'm just not going to do it. I did a post not too long ago. We bought a guitar a couple of years ago and we're like, oh yeah, we're totally going to learn how to do this. We bought this like self-study course. It just didn't happen. And so I know for me, I'm going to learn best when I have somebody who's going to explain it to me that I can ask questions of, that I just kind of keep me on my game. Mm-hmm. I think that the best example of, or, you know, the best way to explain being a coach, there are two parts. First, you know best how well you learn. Mm-hmm. Like, are you a self-study kind of a person, or do you do better in an environment where there's a little more accountability? So that's one thing about yourself. And the second thing is, I have found very consistently, is that you get further faster when you work with a coach. Mm-hmm. So just a couple of things to consider. And it's totally up to you. Obviously, you know, there's no wrong answer.
No, there is no wrong answer. And I'll just add that you probably already know what you need to do, but the majority of the population who knows what they need to do oftentimes does not do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't like the answer.
I've experienced it myself. I know what I need to do. Mm-hmm. But it takes me a while to kick myself in the butt enough to actually do the thing. Mm. When I have the accountability of someone checking in on me, then it completely changes the game.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think that, it may often be that they're not checking in on me or you or whatever, but that you're checking in on yourself. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that's the ultimate goal. I mean, my objective really is to be out of a job. Like, I work with clients for a certain period of time. And the point is that they're going to be great. They know how to use the tools. They go on and they don't, you know, I serve my purpose for a period of time, and that's great. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting you said about kicking my own butt, because I take a different approach. I think that, so often we are trained to, you know, it's like this drill sergeant savage kind of mentality. And there's so many studies that show that self-compassion is actually more effective in creating change. So I find that very often with my clients that I'm the voice of, I mean, it's like tough love. Like, I love you and I know you can do it, but let's also show some self-compassion. Like, these habits have developed for a reason. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not because anybody's a bad person at all. They've developed for a reason. It's a coping mechanism. Let's just unwind it. Mm-hmm. Let's pull back the covers a little bit. Let's see what's going on under there. Let's take care of it. And then you can go on and live this life that you just love.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have anything that you would like to offer our listeners today?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I have, if anything in this, you know, our discussion has resonated with you, if you're kind of considering your own drinking habits, I do have a craving hack that I have on my website that I'll give you the link to. That I definitely recommend that for everybody. So you can download that and leave it on your phone. And, you know, when you feel that urge coming up, you can just kind of excuse yourself for a couple minutes. It's just really nice to have that as just to help you in those moments. I do have, there's a whole page on my website with some free resources, just some things to consider. Mm-hmm. But I think the overarching message is that you're not alone at all. Oh, no. I mean, in fact, they look at all these studies about how drinking increases after traumatic events, you know, after 9/11, after Katrina, after all these things. And actually, American women are reporting that they have 41% more heavy drinking days since before the pandemic. So again, you're not alone, but there are resources available for you if you fall within this area of a gray area drinker, like a non-alcoholic, but just not loving the results you're getting. It's totally possible to change that. And there's nothing wrong at all.
Nothing at all.
Yep. Yep.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Caroline. It has been a pleasure to speak with you, and we will talk again soon.
Thank you.
Awesome.